From KHOL, this is Jackson Unpacked. Our podcast on news, music, and culture in Jackson Hole and around the Mountain West. I'm Tyler Pratt. Coming up on today's show, Jacksonites share their concerns for the safety of LGBTQ plus kids in the state following the death of a gender diverse teenager in Oklahoma, and as bills aimed at banning gender affirming care advance across the U.S. and in Wyoming.
I'm able at this point to protect my child, but I don't know how long that'll last.
And some residents in Idaho's Teton Valley are voting in the presidential election primaries a little differently this year, through caucuses, which may present challenges for some of the Gem State.
Some of these counties are geographically quite large, have physical features that make it difficult to travel.
These stories and more coming up on Jackson Unpacked. Thanks for tuning in today. The recent death of a non-binary teenager in Oklahoma has resonated across the country. Nex Benedict died in late February after reportedly being beaten by a group of girls in a high school bathroom, though law enforcement are still investigating the cause of death. But dozens of people in Jackson recently came out together in the freezing cold to honor Nex's life and bring attention to legislation that may dial back more rights of LGBTQ plus people and kids in the U.S. and Wyoming. KHOL's Hannah Mersbach reports.
Surrounded by rainbow flags and signs that say protect our children is 13-year-old Augie Henry, who identifies as non-binary or gender fluid. They say Nex Benedict's death hit close to home.
I've been bullied for my gender identity for almost ever since I came out, and school districts aren't actually that good at stopping bullies.
Standing near the Elk Antler Arch in the center of Jackson, Augie, a middle school student, says they've been reading up on studies that show targeting gender-diverse youth like them can lead to increased depression and risk of suicide.
If it doesn't change, things like this are just going to keep happening.
Augie and their mom, Kira Griffith, say they're queer people across Teton County. And just recently, Augie had a 13th birthday party where several of the guests identified as non-binary.
It was important, I think, to have that represented in our community, where it doesn't always feel like in rural Wyoming that we have that queer pride going on here, but it is here in our community.
But that community could be getting smaller. Griffith says they've seen families with gender-diverse youth leave the region in the last year, seeking care in other states like Colorado that they say have more accepting policies. Griffith says her family is staying in Jackson for now.
I'm able at this point to protect my child, but I don't know how long that'll last.
The vigil for Nex Benedict was put together by Cheyenne Sievertson, a prominent advocate for Teton County's queer community, who's handing out candles.
There really aren't sufficient words. There's nothing I could say to make what happened to this child okay.
Sievertson is a local therapist for gender-diverse youth and organized the vigil with Jackson Hole Pride. She says she's worried that more queer kids like Nex Benedict may die if more isn't done to help protect them.
What was happening on the local policy levels and the national and state policy levels all contributed to the death of this child.
Sievertson says in recent years, state legislatures around the country have seen a steady flow of bills impacting gender-diverse kids.
So, while it is heartbreaking, shocking, devastating, it is exactly what will happen when we target this population and we let these kids down. They get hurt. They die.
Wyoming and other states recently made it illegal for transgender girls to participate on female sports teams. And across the country, there have been sweeping efforts to limit gender-affirming healthcare access. Sievertson says this kind of rhetoric has real impacts on the youth she works with in therapy and support groups.
A lot is happening that makes their world scarier and smaller. They're afraid of their community, they're afraid of their country, and still, like any of us, want to be able to be themselves.
Mars William Silva waves a pink and blue flag, the transgender colors, on the corner of Broadway and Cash, with the glowing cowboy bar sign in the background. Silva, who's gay, says his friends are all sitting inside across the street, warm at a local restaurant. But he chose to be out here.
The least I can do is be uncomfortable in the cold, standing out here in the middle of the town that I love.
Silva says he owes it to his trans brothers and sisters to be outside, standing up and protesting against the people targeting LGBTQ+ rights.
We gotta love. And that's what I'll do, with my hands freezing, holding this flag up.
With a smile on his face, Silva greets locals and tourists crossing the busy intersection during the vigil.
Have a great day, gentlemen. Thank you. You guys have a great night.
What's the flag for, if you don't mind me asking?
Just standing here for other people who I want to represent.
Nice.
Who can't represent themselves sometimes.
All right, well, I appreciate you, man.
Yes, sir. Have a great day.
As ungloved hands go numb, the group starts to disperse for the night. And middle school student Augie Henry says being around supporters tonight is a really good distraction from reality.
Just because this stuff's happening, don't be scared to be who you are. Even though it's bad, still just power through it. More gender diverse and more people who show who they are, the better.
Rolling up their pride flags and blowing out the candles lit around the picture of Next Benedict, advocates say they'll continue standing up for trans youth and that they're not going quiet anytime soon. For KHOL News, I'm Hannah Merzbach.
Here in Wyoming, the sort of legislation people at Next Benedict's vigil have shared concerns about has recently passed both the State House and Senate and now heads to the governor's desk for the final call on if it will become law. SB 99, formerly called Chloe's Law, would ban most forms of gender-affirming care for minors. Healthcare professionals argue the ban curbs the rights of trans kids and their parents. Supporters of the ban say they don't consider those treatments to be proper. It's not the first time Wyoming lawmakers have tried to pass such a bill, though efforts have been unsuccessful in the past. For KHOL, Chris Clements reports on the bill's journey through the state legislature this year and some of the response it's garnered from residents.
On a frigid winter day in Cheyenne, lawmakers and Wyomingites file into a wood-paneled committee room underneath the Capitol. They've come to give testimony, or to hear it, on legislation that aims to regulate the medical options available for transgender youth under the age of 18 in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what I'm presenting to you is Senate File 99, Chloe's Law, Gender Change Prohibition.
That's Cheyenne Senator Anthony Bouchard, the sponsor of Chloe's Law. It's a ban that would prevent underage Wyoming residents from accessing forms of health care that affirm their gender identity, known as gender-affirming care. It can refer to a wide range of health care services, from social services and psychotherapy to medical procedures. Bouchard and supporters of the ban say they don't consider those treatments to be proper. They say they're worried that some forms of gender-affirming care could be difficult to reverse if people who receive that care later come to regret it.
These kids are being kicked to the curb because you have a whole movement that doesn't even want to listen to what's happening there to these victims.
Opponents of Bouchard's ban emphasize the medical associations and research that have found gender-affirming care to reduce feelings of depression and suicide in an already vulnerable population. They point to data that shows it's rare for people who undergo treatments related to gender identity transitions to later wish they could reverse them. These treatments seek to lessen the feelings of distress that can come when someone's sex assigned at birth doesn't match their gender identity. A smattering of cowboy hats stick out from the crowd as the hearing moves along.
My name is Sarah Burlingame. I'm the executive director of Wyoming Equality, and we are unsurprisingly not in support of this bill.
For Burlingame, Chloe's Law represents an intrusion by the legislature into difficult conversations usually reserved for parents, their children, and their physicians. She points out the gender transition surgeries for minors that this ban would outlaw are not performed in Wyoming. Not only that, Wyoming Equality is also opposed to those types of surgeries for minors.
As are all of the best practices in medicine, there is no disagreement on that. The only disagreement is, should the Wyoming legislature be able to dictate to Wyoming physicians what level of care that they can provide.
Although physicians agree minors should take caution in getting gender transition surgeries, there are other treatments that are helpful, like puberty blockers and hormone therapies. Both would be outlawed under the new statute, and physicians could lose their medical licenses if they administer them or violate any other part of the law. Burlingame and those opposing the ban worry this would muddy the waters of what kinds of health care physicians can legally provide their patients.
It's very troubling to people who are looking to practice medicine in the state of Wyoming.
Senator Bouchard says the majority of trans and LGBTQ people in the state aren't interested in stopping the legislation.
It just really depends whether they're activists or not. I've talked to people who are gay, and they told me that this isn't even their issue. They just want to be left alone as gay people, and they don't think that this fight with the transgender is theirs.
When asked about recent Contact Your Legislator events hosted across Wyoming in response to bills like Chloe's Law, Bouchard said,
"It just depends whether they're cultural Marxists or they just want to be left alone."
My name is Daniel Galbraith, and I am the coordinator of the All Coalition, which is supported by Casper Pride.
Galbraith is at a Casper Pride event.
And I am surrounded by folks who are chatting about the messages they're going to send and writing those messages on some really awesome postcards to send to legislators.
Grace Nimitello is a mental health provider in Casper who has patients under the age of 18. She's there because she's worried about how legislation like Chloe's Law impacts her patients.
A lot of the fear and a lot of the mental health concerns they were experiencing, suicidality, fear of not belonging, fear of being targeted, legislation like this really drives that fear, and it really puts those young folks at risk, really, just to be quite honest.
The group has already sent the postcards to their legislators.
Chris Clements reporting for KHOL on SB 99, a bill banning most forms of gender-affirming care for minors, which has now passed the legislature and heads to the governor's desk. You're listening to Jackson Unpacked. Just joining us, you're listening to Jackson Unpacked from KHOL, where we showcase reporting and interviews on news, music, and culture in Jackson Hole and around the Mountain West. New episodes of Jackson Unpacked drop every other Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Summer's buzzing, out for a dream. Sun setting soon, come on, what you think?
Jackson Unpacked is generously sponsored by the Snake River Sporting Club. At nearly 1,000 acres, this private western community accesses the Snake River and Bridger-Teton National Forest, not to mention a golf course, equestrian center, and fully functioning ranch. More information about excursions, amenities, and lifestyle at snakeriversportingclub.com.
Catch a glance, or so I assume. The chest press a piece, the ever-growing rhythm.
You're listening to local band Strumbucket, the group behind the music for Jackson Unpacked, live in the KHOL studio. They recently dropped their new album, Chest Vessel Beats, which showcases their wide musical range. You can head over to 891KHOL.org to hear new live recordings in our studio and their chat with our music director, Jack Catlin. And KHOL is presenting Strumbucket and West Coast funk band Diggin' Dirt at the Mangy Moose on Friday, March 22nd. You're tuned to Jackson Unpacked. Idaho switched to caucuses this year instead of primaries to help determine the 2024 presidential nominees. Democrats won't caucus until May, but the Republican caucus was just held amid a recent major winter storm that swept the Teton Valley region and much of the Mountain West, and it appears most GOP voters didn't make it out to cast their ballots. KHOL contributor Kyle Mackey reports on why the Gem State pivoted to caucuses this year and what local voters have to say about their options.
Volunteers shovel and sprinkle ice melt along the sidewalk leading into Teton High School in Driggs shortly before noon on a Saturday when doors opened for the Republican caucus.
Morning, folks.
Good morning.
Be careful.
You'd think for the Republican caucus you'd have red.
It is blue salt going down on the sidewalk.
Snow continues to fall steadily throughout the two-hour voting period, and many voters, like Trudy Kaufman from near Tetonia, say it made it hard to show up.
Even though my husband plowed our driveway, it's getting just filled as much as he plowed it, so, and the roads were rough.
Still, she made it work because she had a mission.
I wanted to vote against Trump, basically, because he scares me, and I want to be maybe the lone Republican who didn't vote for Trump in this county. So
it turns out that Kaufman, who supported former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, who has since dropped out of the race, wasn't the only person to vote against former President Donald Trump, but she was in the minority. Official results for the county from the Idaho GOP tallied 49 votes for Trump, 10 for Haley, and 2 for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, though he has also already dropped out of the race. If you're doing the math at home, that's 61 people, just 2% of the registered Republicans in Teton County who were eligible to vote, according to the Idaho Secretary of State's office. Jacqueline Kettler is a political scientist at Boise State University focused on state politics and elections.
We regularly see lower turnout in caucuses for a few reasons.
The biggest one, she says, is that people generally need to be physically present for a caucus at a specific place and time. There was no absentee voting option for this Republican caucus, not if you had to work or were too ill, or even if you were serving abroad in the military.
Another challenge is the geography of Idaho. Like, some of these counties are geographically quite large, have physical features that make it difficult to travel.
That said, the Republican Party got some criticism for not allowing absentee voting in this nominating contest. But its chair has said that the state GOP did its best to re-enfranchise as many voters as possible after the state legislature disenfranchised all Idaho voters by eliminating the state's presidential primary. Kettler explains.
We're in this odd situation where the presidential primary election date accidentally got removed last year during the legislative session.
This happened as part of an effort to streamline Idaho's elections and move the presidential primary to coincide with other state and local primaries in May. There were two pieces of legislation making the change. One got rid of the old presidential primary date, and the other confirmed the new one. But just the first bill got passed before the legislature adjourned.
There were some efforts to try to address this issue, but they have not been successful so far. So the parties were left with the option of holding a caucus.
The Idaho Democratic Party will hold its caucus on May 23rd, and it will offer an absentee voting option. As for Republicans who participated on the recent Saturday, several said it felt like a normal election with a paper ballot. Jessica Curran lives in Driggs.
I was expecting a lot, something different because it's a caucus, but, you know, I can fill out a bubble. It's fine.
You make sure that you are on the register. You get a stamp. You go into the balloting location.
Harley Wilcox is a caucus volunteer and former Republican county commissioner sporting a beige beaver fur cowboy hat for the event. He shares who he's supporting this year.
You know, I'm going to vote for Trump again. I think that he essentially is an idiot when he talks, but I love his policy, and I think he's the best candidate, and I hope he wins.
Ballots were supposed to be counted by hand after voting finished at 2 in the afternoon, but journalists weren't allowed inside caucus sites to report and observe the count like they are during state-run elections, unless they were registered Republicans going into their own caucus sites. The Idaho Capital Sun first reported on the press restriction in mid-February, raising concerns about transparency that Jacqueline Kettler, the political scientist, says she agrees with.
If people have concerns about election security or integrity, closing the doors may increase those concerns, even among their own voters.
The Idaho GOP was not able to accommodate an interview request for this story, but its rules chairman wrote in a newsletter before the caucus that the party was simply upholding rules set by a state committee. He also said balloting requires some secrecy to preserve voter privacy and, quote, prevent intimidation by bad actors, including members of the media. The Idaho Democratic Party also did not respond in time for broadcast about whether or not they would allow reporters into their caucus sites in May. Back in Driggs, voter Jessica Curran heads out into the storm with her husband after casting their ballots. They both supported Haley in the election and say they're not happy about how polarized the country's become.
It's really hard to not feel like you have a voice and that you're being overpowered by an extreme minority on either side.
That's part of why Curran says she liked that this year's caucus gave her the chance to vote earlier and have a choice between candidates before everyone but the front runner drops out.
Not everybody in every country gets to vote, and it's a privilege that we have and that we should absolutely honor and take advantage of that.
Looking ahead to the general election, Curran says she's excited to teach her 18-year-old daughter about voting. It's just that in Idaho, the rules about how to cast a ballot might have changed yet again by the next time a presidential primary rolls around. For K2L News, I'm Kyle Mackey in Driggs.
Thanks for tuning in to K2L. I'm Tyler Pratt. The year is 1949, and some skiers and cowboys were at a bar in Leadville, Colorado. Naturally, the conversation went to who's fastest, so they decided to see about it. But as a team, the cowboys pulled the skiers on their horses down Main Street, and that's how what we know today as ski-joring began, or at least according to the legend. Over the years, the sport has gained traction, bringing in lots of money and visitors to small Rocky Mountain communities during winter. But as Wyoming Public Radio's Caitlin Tan reports, this all depends on snow, and this year, it's been tricky. Take a listen.
All right, folks, here we go. Make a little noise.
Hundreds of people came out to watch the ski-joring in Pinedale on a recent weekend.
Looking good, guys. Looking good. Let's go, buddy. Let's go.
A skier whips around a turn going at least 30 miles an hour, bracing himself for a huge jump. A powerful brown horse and rider with a cowboy hat are barreling down a flat, snowy track, pulling the skier by a thick rope.
Joe, you got it, buddy. You got it. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Cheer them on, folks. That's a good one.
The ski-joring is the main event of Pinedale's annual winter carnival, and it takes place at the local rodeo grounds. And this year, the snow is sparse, and you can see dirt and sagebrush lining the ski-joring course.
This year, come middle of January, it was getting a little stressful. We were starting to sweat it, wondering if we were going to be able to pull it off.
Monty Bolgiano is one of the main organizers of the event. He says they pulled the ski-joring off by the skin of their teeth and a trusty snowplow.
They scraped every square inch of the rodeo grounds with all 3 inches that were on the ground, and we were able to make enough to have a course built over there.
And making this event happen is huge for the economy. Bolgiano grew up here, watching industries like energy wax and wane.
In a small community like Pinedale, outside of the little bit of industry that we have here, we are relying on tourism.
But during the winter, it's desolate unless people visit. So an event like Winter Carnival,
Get hotels filled up and restaurants filled up and just make it a fun, exciting weekend.
And the conundrum of holding snow-dependent events on a low snow year has rippled across the state this year. Saratoga had to bring in 171 dump truck loads of snow from outside of town to build their ski-joring track. But other communities weren't so lucky. Both Gillette and Sheridan had to cancel their ski-joring events.
By the time it came to make the call on ski-joring and some of our other events, it was pretty simple. There was no snow, and it was 55, 60 degrees a week before the event.
Sean Parker heads up travel and tourism in Sheridan. He says it was pretty hard on local businesses, which depend on the huge turnout. 2019 was the first year they held ski-joring. According to Parker, the town saw more people in one day than they do all month in February.
It's a big deal. I mean, you go from nothing to something, and any positive economic stimulus helps.
Parker says millions are spent in the community. And this year, they still held concerts and a hockey tournament, but it wasn't the same.
We need ski-joring to see the really big positive impacts.
Parker says if there's more winters like this, they'd consider moving the ski-joring to the mountains where there's more snow. back at the Pinedale Ski Joring parking lot, horses are tied at trailers, and local skier Sean Boylan stands at his pickup in snow pants and cowboy boots holding skis.
And a Modelo, yeah, helps with the nerves, because you do get nervous.
But Boylan won this race last year, and this year he was worried whether the race would even happen.
But at the end of the day, it's kind of just a rowdy time, so if you're skiing through mud, like, oh well. It's all good fun.
So he gets his racing stuff ready.
Rubber gardening gloves to grip 30-foot rope with the carabiner on it. That goes onto the rigging of your saddle. Then it's just a set of GS skis.
Boylan is skiing behind horse rider John Hyde. Hyde sports a handlebar mustache and perfectly circled sunglasses. Hyde lives and breathes ski joring.
You get old, you retire from rodeos. It's just something to do in the winter besides snowmobile. Have horses, may as well use them. And this now is their home on the road.
Hyde spends thousands of dollars in Rocky Mountain communities between gas, food, entry fees. But it's worth it for him because, well, he likes to win. And there's hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars to be won. So Hyde plops his leather saddle on his big bay horse named Perry. He cinches the saddle tight. But before Hyde and Perry head to the course, Hyde's hot tip for winning?
I don't know. I guess just go like hell.
In fact, Hyde is planning the first ski joring at his ranch about 15 miles south of Pinedale, hoping to continue to bring money and people to the area. But it's all dependent on the snow. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Caitlin Tan in Pinedale.
That's it today on Jackson Unpacked. Original music for the show is performed by the local band Strum Bucket. I'm Tyler Pratt, and this is KHOL, Jackson.